Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com, that broadcasts out of the Black Belt, and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And then that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always see it. There you'll always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, just hit that like button, please. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for Awakening Media is there also. Always full of interesting content. New podcasts of the various programs on Time for Awakening being posted daily that you can download, listen at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we have two special guests joining us, author, cultural historian, and associate professor of education, leadership, and policy studies at Howard University, Dr. Kemet Shockley. Also, his colleague, educator, activist, Kofi Laniles, are joining us this evening to talk about their interesting documentary on the Maroons in Colombia, South America, and how that can relate to us here. A very interesting documentary. Both brothers will be here to talk about it tonight and share with the listening audience. And we'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m., for podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I'm looking forward to our discussion based off of the documentary Brother Kemet and had done.
Yeah, it was very interesting. It was eye-opening, Richard. A lot of things, a lot of questions I want to ask to both of our guests this evening in reference to the documentary. And I know they'll be able to tell the listening audience where they can view the documentary and, you know, all the background behind it.
And yeah, I think it was important, the question that is posed in there, what lessons can we learn from, you know, African brothers and sisters in Colombia that's a part of a community that's been going on for
yeah.
Over 400 years.
I know it. Let's welcome in our guest, author, cultural historian, and associate professor of education, leadership, and policy studies at Howard University. Dr. Kemet Shockley is with us. Dr. Shockley, how are you, sir?
Doing great this evening. How are you doing, brother?
I'm doing great.
Great.
And I think we also have educator and activist Kofi Lanials with us also. I got to see what line he's on here, whether it's 347 or 518.
347.
Good. And we have educator and activist, Brother Kofi Lanials, with us also. How are you, sir?
How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
All right.
Doing great. You know, yesterday, myself and my co-host, Brother Richard, viewed the documentary on the Palenque settlement, a town, community in Colombia, South America. Before we get started with that, because I know that you were the executive producer, Brother Kofi, before we get started with that, Professor Shockley, your journey before you got to South America, talk about what kind of led up to that, your desire to look into the Maroon communities. Was it based off of some of your studies, questions from your students? Was it just a desire for you to look into this? Give us a little background on it.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to ask Brother Kofi to help me with some of that as well.
Okay.
We are both co-executive producers with the film.
Okay.
And I'm going to start by, I want to talk about the fact that I'm an educator. So my career started off as a teacher in a middle school, teaching middle school black children and finding out how much they hated themselves and finding that the things they do stem from the fact that they hate themselves. It was easy for me to catch on to that because I hated myself when I was in school too.
Okay.
So what I hated the most was the fact that I was black. I didn't have that kind of self-love because I went to a school, particularly when I was in high school, it was almost all white high school in Indiana. And what I was able to see was that in education, the idea is that white is right. And like Dr. Welsing said, brown stick around, yellow mellow, black get back. So that self-hatred was definitely cultivated in the white systems. And then I went to white universities and got even more of it. But I was one of the lucky ones who ran into a mentor. And the mentor that I had helped me to understand that I should be proud of who I am as an African person. And that set me on a course to want to become a teacher. So I became a teacher because I remembered the experiences that I had as a student, and I wanted a different kind of experience for the people that I was teaching. In the course of finding out how much my young people hated themselves, I started to introduce African concepts in the classroom.
Okay.
I started to introduce them to people like Dr. Francis Press Welsing, having them read texts by Naim Akbar, having them learn about Imhotep and the genius inventor, if you will, of math and science, and introducing the young people to people like Hatshepsut, et cetera, and helping them to understand the contributions of people like Amenhotep IV, just really getting them into the history. And I noticed that that had an impact on these young people. So when I decided to leave teaching and become a college professor, my study and my research was in African-centered education, again, because I saw the impact that it can have as a teacher and seeing other African-centered teachers and how that transformed the minds of our young people. So I started writing articles. I have a lot of articles out, research pieces that talk about all of that. I have several books that talk about what it is that our young people need based upon my years of experience and research. When Brother Kofi came into the doctoral program a few years ago as a student, he was telling me about something that I heard first Asa Hilliard talk about, and that is the Maroon, Asa Hilliard has a book, Dr. Hilliard has his book, Seba, The Reawakening of the African Mind. He also has The Maroon Within Us.
Mm-hmm.
And powerful books that talk about how we need to reconnect and reacquaint with who we are as African people. And Brother Kofi started talking about the Maroons that are in an area that's close to where his wife is from. And so in our conversations, we started thinking, well, what can we do so that we can bring some of what they're doing there, if what we see is good, back to the people? And then I'll let Brother Kofi kind of pick up and talk about how we ended up going from there into doing this documentary.
Okay. Brother Kofi?
Oh, yes. From there, we decided that we would write a couple research papers on the Maroons what they were doing, and really focusing on their socialization practices. After we decided that we would definitely want to publish some papers, we said, well, why don't we go down and also do a little bit of videoing, just in case we want to create a short film, maybe 10 to 15 minutes. From there, we decided that we wanted to do a feature-length documentary on the Maroons. And prior to going, we were lucky enough to meet someone from the village who actually works on a national level with the ethno education program. And he served as an in to the village. I had visited the village a couple times prior to going down to shoot the film with my wife when we try to go to Columbia annually. So we had been to the village a couple times prior to that, but it was more of a going in, talking to people, getting a sense of what it is to be in the Maroon village, but not doing in-depth research regarding what's actually happening there and why is it meaningful to African people worldwide. So when we decided that we wanted to shoot a film, we began the process of finding a film crew and drafting a script around what we wanted to capture. And what we found was that a lot of what we wanted to capture were along the lines of research that we had done before. So we used some of our research techniques when we went into the village to make sure that when we were seeking to understand African ways of knowing and the culture of the African people there, that we were, one, holding true to an Afrocentric perspective, and also making sure that we're using Africological techniques in collecting the data and in making the film. So that's kind of how it started and how we got there, and just some of our thinking that went into the type of film that we wanted to create and the type of impact that we wanted it to have.
Dr. Shockley and Brother Linnells, the statement that you start out the documentary with, Professor Shockley, when you state, why are we trying to learn lessons from people who have less money, less opportunity, less resources, and maybe less education than we do? And when I say we, I'm talking about blacks here in the diaspora of America. And then you went in onto the documentary to kind of dig into, get the answers to that kind of rhetorical question that you asked. That kind of set it up for me too, because I was interested in that question that you asked and see if I would receive answers during the documentary. And I received many answers to several of the questions, and plus one that really stood out for me. And I know that we'll get to it during the course of conversation, but, I did notice, and I'm going to turn it over to Brother Richard, because I know he wanted to start out with some things himself. Two things that really stood out to me, that the majority of our people here know nothing about. And I'm going to just speak for everybody, because, I don't think I'm much different than the average black person. I had no clue that the city, and I'll term it a city, the city of Palenque was established by our ancestors at least 20 years before the documented date that we came to the shores of the United States. That city has been established over 400 years by our ancestors. And another thing I noticed, that the people in the village weren't cloudy on who they are. And when I say cloudy, and I don't want to disparage anybody, but when I say cloudy, you didn't hear people running around saying, I'm an Indian, I'm a Maroon, I'm a Blackamoor, I'm a Hebrew. They weren't cloudy. They were clear that they were African. Those are two things that really stood out to me before you even got into the documentary, the meat of it. But, you know, if you want to make some comments on that before I pass the mic to Brother Richard, go ahead if you'd like.
Sure. You know, like at the beginning of this program, you played John Henry Clark, who talked about the relationship between history and the people, and that relationship is the same as the relationship between, it's like a relationship between mother and child. What these people that we met help us to understand is what we could be like in the Americas had we not experienced being chattel slaves. So these are the black people who were able to successfully get away from the white plantations and from the white cultural and psychological molesting that the rest of us experience. So what are they like? They're like you just said, they're confident in who they are. They are confident in, and they like to let you know that they come from couple different places on the continent.
Mm-hmm.
From most of them from, they say, Angola and the Congo. So they even have that connection. They don't need DNA.com. They already know where they come from. And many of them from the Luangwa people in Angola. And they will tell you about that. But yeah, established before the documented date, the 1619 date when we would have been here, and that's, people don't know this, but, and I didn't know this until we started doing this work, and that is that the majority of Africans who end up in the Americas are not in the United States. They're in Brazil and Colombia, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have to understand our connection to them is a direct connection. And then their great warrior, Bankos Bayoho, who really is like the Harriet Tubman of their people there in Palenque, we need to know about them. So we wanted to make sure that our brothers and sisters here in the United States were well aware of the fact that this was established, and to help people to see our connection to who they are. We wanted to know what their strategies are. You had mentioned that you saw a lot of different things there that, but when we answer the question of what can we learn from a people who are in this village, and there's a lot.
Yes. You know,
one of the things that definitely stands out is their families are intact. So when we noticed and we asked about this, we said, well, are most people here married and families and this kind of thing? They said everybody here is married and in a family. And we have a zero divorce rate. And that took us by surprise. You guys have,
not only you.
Nobody here. Yeah, you too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So this is a model. And I think that a model that when you see a model that works for people, and most people look just like you, I think we need to follow the model. And what we hope we captured, what we hope people can do, is to take some of the things that we were able to capture to help provide this model and begin to incorporate those things into what we do here. Because obviously, if you look at what's happening with people in this country, we need a new model. And the model they follow is an African model. So, yeah. I definitely, that resonates with me when you say that, when you start talking about things that we really answer that question of what can we learn from people who most people in this country would see and just start talking about maybe they didn't have any money and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Which raises an important question about culture. And one thing, well, let me say this to back up to both of you. I think it's important for us to, if you can, give us a history of the leader that really, I mean, this 400 years of a continuous social order comes because of a particular leader. And could you just like, and you mentioned his name, but kind of give us a snippet of who Brother Benko, I think that's how you say it?
Yep.
name who he is and what he had to do in order to create this community.
Well, I can take that one. Yeah. So Bankos Bioho was a king in Guinea-Bissau, which is currently known as Guinea-Bissau. And from what we understand, he was Malinke. He was taken away from his village, snatched from his village, tied to the belly of the beast, the ship, and taken across the ocean and found himself on a plantation run by a Spanish man. And this was in 1599. 4 years later, Bankos Bioho, being the king that he was, liberated himself, liberated around 30 other enslaved Africans, and they ran away from Cartagena towards what they knew to be a forested area. Once they got deep into the forest, they decided that this was a place to rest, what is known as Palenque, and that they would create their community or establish their community there. These people who went with Bankos Bioho, they weren't all from the same tribe in Africa. So you had people who spoke different languages, maybe had slight different cultural orientations, a way of relating spiritually, but what they knew is that they were African. And as Chenkat Diop teaches us, that there's that cultural unity that exists across the continent. So they were able to integrate their culture and their ways of knowing under the leadership of Bankos Bioho and establish this village that's currently known as Palenque San Basilio. And in doing that, what they prioritized was the idea of having that African identity, that African way of knowing. And when they would accept other people who freed themselves, or when they would raid other plantations and liberate Africans and integrate them into the village, what they prioritized was this African way of knowing. So whether you were Bakongo, whether you were Luongo, whether you were Malinke, whether you were a Khan, when you came into this space, you were all African. And there was this understanding that a part of our identity is to be free and self-determined. So in this village, of course, under the leadership of Bankos Bioho, they started to create a society with warriors. They had their priests and priestesses. They had their farmers. And they decided that this would be their resting spot, which is Palenque. And they fought many battles to stay free. Under the leadership of Bankos, eventually Bankos was captured, and he was murdered by the Spaniards. But a part of what the Palenqueros taught us was that this African spirit, this warrior spirit that Bankos embodied, was rebirthed all the time. It was a part of a cycle. And they had other leaders such as Domingo Angola, who was their second coming of Bankos Bioho, lead the village and lead the warriors and win many meaningful battles against armies coming from Cartagena or coming from Santa Marta. And it was this idea that we are sovereign, we are free, we are self-determined. And they always fell back on their African ways of knowing. They talk a lot about, you see this in the film, they talk a lot about their ancestors guiding them, speaking to them, and the fact that at the core of their identity is their ancestral knowledge and way of knowing, and that they're repeating that. We are our ancestors. There's a woman who talks about, I'm singing the same songs that my ancestors gave me five generations ago. I'm a continuation of that same song. So what we saw when we were learning about the culture and learning about the people and getting a sense of how their identity is tied to Bankos Bioho and others like him, they could point to many meaningful people in their history when it came to medicinal people, when it came to their warriors, when it came to their leaders, because they see themselves in those people. And they understand that by knowing those stories, that's a part of their identity, but also a part of their ability to remain sovereign. One thing that they do inside of the village to make sure that Bangkok's Biohoe story is proliferated and known by all is that they teach it inside of their schools. So their children are learning their culture, they're learning their history, and they're learning what it means to be an African and have an African identity inside of the school. They're learning it inside of the village as they're walking down the street, the way they talk, the way that they socialize, the way that they're oriented towards one another. It's a part of this extension of their culture, which started back, I mean, on the continent, but was reestablished in 1603 when Bangkok liberated himself and those 30 other people and reestablished this African way of knowing.
Now, you know, one thing that impressed me in the documentary, and I'm still pushing in the sense of what we can learn as you want us to do, and the, what we have to possibly do, which is what they did. And I'm calling it, and y'all can correct me if I'm wrong, I'm calling it a technology. So when they creating this cultural bubble of these Africans, one thing that seemed to come across was the confidence of their language, that they recognized that their language was unique compared to Cartagena?
Cartagena.
And they recognized it, and it wasn't no inferiority understanding, even if the people there didn't recognize it, that language creating a language, if I understand you right, in that origin, because it's different ethnic nations coming together at that period, they had to create a language for themselves. Would that be wrong? Would that be a wrong assessment?
Not at all. I think it's very accurate. They created a language. It's got aspects of African, a lot of African dialect in there, and Spanish and Creole features. The language is, I think, one of the things they use to be able to communicate with each other to so that they could, I guess, maintain their freedom and not be decoded, if you will, by the Europeans who were constantly trying to recapture them and put them back into enslavement, which, by the way, did happen on a lot of maroon villages. People were recaptured. You wonder, what did language have to do, you know, with that? Maybe when people don't establish their own language, they're not able to stay free. So, yeah, the language is important to them. They also say that they believe that really that's the most important part of their culture. So one of the lessons that I took from that is that we have got to learn a language other than just English. We have to establish that as African people, we're going to study an African language so that we can communicate with each other and be able to express to each other the things that we actually are trying to say, because English is extremely limited in its ability to really provide for us the kinds of devices that we need to be able to communicate with each other in meaningful ways and in ways that are going to help us to get free. So I think the Pelinqueros were constant. I think the very first thing that they impressed upon us was the importance of that Pelinquero language. So one of the things that happens in the film is that I say to one of our guides in the morning, because, you know, they speak Spanish too. They speak Spanish fluently, the language of their oppressor. And so I said, do you say buenos dias in the morning? Right. And he says, no, I say señoría, which means señoría is good morning in the Pelinquero language that they created. So these people are creating language, they're creating systems that work for their family, they're creating ways of getting along with each other, that there is no crime rate in that place. But they said the last time they recall any kind of violent crime was in the 1980s. And the elders say that there have only been 3 or 4 violent crimes in the entire 400 or 500 year history of the village. And I thought to myself, well, what can we learn from that? I mean, I mean, there's so much to learn there. You know, no homeless people, this kind of thing. So what we have is a place that really can serve as a model. And I think that obviously, you know, having a language that, like the Palenquero language, is really what they're showing us and what the ancestors are telling us, is that we're going to have to use a language that comes from us in order for us to get free. So, yeah, I think it's really important, and I agree that the technology piece, that the language is a technology, and that we have got to do what we can do to reestablish that which we lost.
And if I can, you know, I'm excited about the documentary. So one of the things that I wanted to know, when will it be generally distributed? But in presenting this to us, the other aspect, but a contrast, because I remember the debate and discussion when the whole around language and what I call American Africans around Ebonics, when we were trying to define our particular expression as a particular language coming out of our particular experience. The difference being, we know for us, talking Black or talking Geechee is not an acceptable thing for us, where the lesson I get from them, they recognize and celebrate their language. And it isn't, even if they go into another area where Cantalina, and for some reason I can't get it together, but there I get there.
Cartagena, yeah.
Cartagena, excuse me. They were saying, even if it was negative things projected, they didn't take that on. They still celebrated their language. And so that was that creating that incubator of the outside inside, that we, you know, a lesson that we have to understand that there is, we have to create the outside inside. To that, the other part of that social structure was that I thought was interesting. If you would expand on what y'all expand on, is the, was it a age grade system, or is that what I understand, which is uniquely African? Is that what I understand they were celebrating also, that in relationship to their social structure?
Yes. So one of the things that's really that we can also take from them is the way that they organize their society so that they can have successful relationships between and among community members and within families. So in the film, they talked about what's the word, the name for those quadros. Yes, quadros. Mm-hmm. So a quadros is an age set group, where in your quadro, you'll be placed with people who were born around the same time you were born. And those people are your compadres, if you will, for your entire life. So anything that you need, you're moving out of town, if you're going to college, if you need money, anything you need, you've got a quadro that is going to be with you for your entire life. Those are your brothers and sisters. And as somebody said in the film, they're like your brothers and sisters who came from another mother. Mm. So that's that connection that you have to the people, to give people the connection that they need for the psychological connection and love that's necessary among the people, so that they never feel like they're alone and they never feel like they don't have the support they need to be functioning members of society. When you leave Palenque, they call it a junta. And a junta is the urban Palenquero. In other words, wherever you go abroad, you've got this group that you can connect with that's going to help you in the same kinds of ways as your quadro, but only members of your quadro may be behind, still in Palenque or other places. But if you were to move to the United States, for example, you would be in the junta that would connect you with other Palenqueros so that you could still have that connection anywhere you go in the world. And so I think I agree with what you said a minute ago about Ebonics and other language systems that people of African descent have tried to establish. They're very important because we have to be able to communicate with ourselves, not just using words that are part of a different language system that we've developed, but we have to understand that within the language is also a lot of cultural stuff. And, you know, in the language we speak, even the one we're speaking now, English, it's hard to even articulate the kind of place that Palenque is using the English language. Because I'm limited to just being able to talk about, intellectually talk about how the people connect with each other, what a junta is, what a cuadro is. I'm limited. But if I could use words that could help you to understand the way the psycho-emotional connection of the people really worked and how they were able to make us feel like we were part of the family. So that it's understated when I say that they made us all of a sudden, we wanted to be Palenqueros, and they welcomed us in as their brothers when we went there to do this work. It's hard to even articulate the degree to which people who were with us in our travel plan transformed themselves while they were there. Because coming in, it's a matter of, well, we're here to see these people, and then we'll jump back on American Airlines and go back home. But while we were there, began to realize that we are perhaps more at home than where we came from. That's hard. It's hard to explain the emotion that went into something like that. And as far as distribution, you know, we are currently looking for a distributor. It's not the priority of a Negro-minded person or a white person to distribute a film like this one. So what we're trying to do is to find people who would be willing. Now, we, in fairness, have just recently started the process of trying to find a distributor, but we do need one. But if the film is available for a rental or purchase, and we'll get that information out to you shortly.
Okay.
Can I just add one thing to the cuadro? Because it doesn't come across in the film. The people in Palenque, I mean, a lot of them go to school there. They have a very high graduation rate. They have most of them go on to university. And these are professionals, doctors, lawyers. In the film, you see a lot of college professors. You see historians. We had a couple people who were in the film who had written 3 or 4 books. And what happens in Palenque, because they're so effective in this intergenerational transmission of culture, is that even when you leave the village, you are still with your cuadro, whether your cuadro is in Cartagena, there's another city near there named Barranquilla, there's a capital named Bogota, are there in a village, another pueblo that's near Palenque, you're still connected to those people. And there's this sense of no matter where we go, we are Palenquero. We were in a village, there were people who were born in Palenque who had moved to Venezuela, and they had come back to visit to see their cuadro members and what they said to be rejuvenated and to experience that healing, to come home. And every year in the month of January, people from all across the world come back to Palenque to see their cuadro members, and they go fishing together. They play dominoes together. They visit each other's families and see their grandparents and their brothers and sisters' mothers. And there's this sense of my cuadro is with me no matter where I am and no matter how old I am. And we will always come back to have our time together. That wasn't captured in the film, but this, I'm a part of something. My cuadro being that thing that I'm a part of is very real, and it's something that's lasting, and it's something that's very meaningful and celebrated annually and daily in the ways that they communicate and the actions that they take.
The question, Professor Shockley and Brother Kofi, I think on your end, Brother Kofi, you might have your volume up on your speaker or something, because I'm getting some feedback. If you can either turn that down or come on your come off your hands free, that'll stop that feedback. The question for both of you men. And it's something that we don't really grasp here. And I think that we don't grasp it is because we've been so far removed from our culture. And the formations, you, Brother Kofi and Professor Shockley have been talking about it. Richard has been mentioning it, about the formations being African. all of their formations seem to have been based in African culture. And the formation that I'm talking about in particular is war formation. Now, two reasons I say that. The leader, Banco, was murdered, captured and murdered by Spaniards after they signed a peace agreement after several attacks on the community failed and they couldn't overthrow it. They signed a peace treaty, and you can correct me if I'm wrong or going off track. I think 2 years into that, he was murdered, and his body was put on public display. All of that is similar to what they did here to strike fear in our ancestors. It didn't strike fear in the residents of Palenque. They continued on, and they've continued on for over 400 years of being under cultural attack. So that showed that their not only their family formations and social formations, but their war formations were African-centered because these European attacks seemed to have failed each time. Your comments on that before I move to my next point.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think that that is perhaps one of the most important things we can learn from the Palenqueros and from the Maroons in general is the fact that they see themselves as the example for the world, for all black people in the world. And this is what they say. We are the example for all black people in the world on how African people can be victorious. Mm. And one of the strategies they use is called a civia. They say they saw themselves as a civia community, that while you're asleep getting rest, I'm awake watching out in the village to make sure we're safe. And we switch. I'm asleep, you do the same for me. The strategies of, you know, we didn't talk about this in the film, but one of the things we learned about how the Maroons protected themselves by dressing up as a bush, or you're walking around looking like a bush, and then when you get it within the bushes, no one can tell that there's a person sort of camouflaged into the bush, so that when the Europeans would come and try to get into the village area, you pop out with your sword and you stab and kill the enemy. Hiding underwater, being able to be like an alligator almost, your nose just out just enough. And then when they come through to try to make their attack, you come from underneath the water and attack. Now, those are also things. Those are also things that aren't necessarily in our documentary, but they're things that we are learning about how they engaged in war. So I agree that, you know, those kinds of things are definitely important lessons for us to learn. And then, of course, later in history, we have warriors like the Black Seminoles and the Yemisee Indians and things of that nature to sort of help us to see that all groups of people of African descent who are free have war tactics and strategies that ensure their survival. So, yes, that's an important part of what it means to be a Maroon, is to be able to always see yourself as a warrior who is fighting for the liberation of his or her people.
And the other thing, and you you spoke about this earlier, Professor Shockley, and I kind of wanted to wait till I introduce it, but I'm going to introduce it now. And it goes towards my Americanization, so to speak, or my indoctrination of being here. The minute we see groupings of a lot of our people, negative thoughts enter our mind. It's almost subconscious. So when I seen the town of Palenque, immediately I started to think that, because you see it here. I live in Philadelphia. You see it, several of our communities are totally out of control. And there's certain elements that are out of control. We're getting a little interference there. I think it's, we'll work through it. Whether you mentioned Chicago or Baltimore, it's areas of our communities that are out of control. And it's not our doings by itself, but we know it's other forces involved. But people do get involved in foolishness. There, I didn't notice any police walking around in the documentary, and I was wondering when it was going to be addressed. Later on in the documentary, it was addressed about the elders and the councils of elders that handle anything that goes on in the community. They also had the Maroon Guards, and they had their shirts on that patrol the community, and I didn't see guns or weapons on them. And if any dispute happened, that the people had the respect of the people themselves respected the elders enough to know that if any dispute happens, and they're human, so it's disputes going to happen, that it could be handled by the elders and they would adhere to the words of the elders. And if the Maroon Guards went about patrols and seeing things happening, that they could handle these things with conversations and get to the bottom of what's going on, and the people had to respect. Talk about the magnitude of that, because all of our people here, we think that it's needs for jails and it's needs for police. That type of thinking and that type of environment that the brothers and sisters lived under down there is so foreign to me, and I'm quite sure to others of our people listening. I just couldn't fathom. Talk about it from your experience there, seeing it. And Professor right. Shockley or Kofi? Go ahead.
Go ahead. Yeah. Okay. So it's important, I think, the dialogue piece.
Okay.
They say we settle our disputes through dialogue. So police are all elders. In fact, you could look at it like there's no police there. There's instead people who are there to maintain the order and harmony in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Those people are called the Maroon Guardians. And the Maroon Guardians are all elders. It's interesting because what they say is that you would never want to put Palin Carroll into a jail, because they say that jail breaks the person and makes the person ashamed and an outcast. So we don't want to do that. Instead, what we want to do is to talk to the person, figure out what it was that was that they had difficulty with, and then sort of bring them back into society and figure out what do we need to do so that this violation that you may have done would never happen again.
Okay.
So the first thing you have to have in order for you to approach somebody that way is you have to have some sort of respect for them. You have to respect them, and you have to think of them as being connected to you. The violence that we see, you mentioned Chicago and Baltimore, et cetera. I think that it's really easy to be violent against somebody when you feel as though they're disconnected from you and they're not a part of you. So the sense of community and the sense of connection that you see in Palenque is the opposite of what you see.
I think we just lost Professor Shockley. I guess he'll call right back. You take it up. Go ahead.
Yeah, I can. So I think where he was going with it is that when you're in Palenque, there's a sense that everyone is connected. So even when I walked down the street, I was stopped by an elder, and I was with one of the friends that I've made in Palenque. And he said, Grandma, you don't know him? And she looks at me, and she's looking in my eyes, and she said, he's not from here. I don't recognize his eyes. And they have this thing where they say that they can see your ancestors in your eyes. You mentioned earlier the idea that when people see maybe a group of young Black children, they start to have these deficit thoughts, are this pathology starts to creep in.
Yes.
Where it's negative seeing them. When you see a young person in Palenque, you see their ancestors, you see their grandparents, you see their parents. You're not just looking at the one person, you're looking at the family that person is connected to. It's a different way of seeing a young person.
Wow.
And in Palenque, they're very intentional about the ways that they see their young people, always connected to the community and always connected to their ancestors and to their families. One of the things that
we learned and that we felt like is approachable and possibly doable here is that Palenque there, it's in essence, it's an intentional community where you know the people who are in your neighborhood, the people who are on your block. You're just not moving there because there's lower rent. You're not moving there because you want to buy a house and get some equity. You're there for a reason. You're there because you want to be there. There's intentionality behind it. And here, there are some communities here that are intentional communities where the neighbors know each other, their families are connected. They're making sure that their children are growing up in the right ways. They're sharing values. They're together to practice certain rituals spiritually and otherwise. And they're making sure that in that community, everyone's connected. So when I see you, I see your family. And then eventually when you have children, when I see your children, I will see you and I will see your parents who are their grandparents. So in Palenque, there's this sense that no one is disconnected from the community and no one is looked at as an individual. You're always looked at in relation to your family. And I think here in America, from what we've seen, young people in the United States tend to be looked at as an individual, especially young Black children. And the finger is pointed at them and people are looking at in action, or they're associating them with a pathology or a stereotype. And automatically there's negativity being, thrown in that young person's way. One of the things that we mentioned in the film is that the Palenqueros have been able to protect their children from outside forces, but specifically from police forces, because they police themselves. And by doing that, there's a sense that you are always protected, you are always safe. The thought that something violent could happen to you while walking down the street is not even something that enters their mind. So even the way that they move in relation to each other is different. And one of the things that they told us is that police agencies from the outside have been visiting Palenque to try to figure out what they're doing there to keep the violence pretty much at zero. And that a lot of things that these outside entities think that they can learn and take away, it's impossible because they don't have the culture. They're not oriented that way. You just can't come in a week and learn about what we're doing and then take it and try to scale it up to work for a city of 1.5 million. It works for us because we are a village of 5,000 to 6,000 people, and we want to keep it this way. We want to all be attached to one another. We want to all grow and have a future with one another, because that's a part of our sovereignty and that's a part of our ability to be self-determined.
You know, you got cut off, Professor Shockley. Did you want to finish your thought?
As I came back in, I was listening to what Brother Kofi was saying. I think he covered it pretty well. Yeah.
Well, we're gonna take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation with author, cultural historian, associate professor of education, leadership, and policy studies at Howard University, Dr. Kemet Shockley is with us, along with his colleague, educator, and activist Kofi Lanials. We're talking about the Palenque Maroon community in Colombia, South America, and the documentary that was made by these two gentlemen. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. And I want us to grasp this during the commercial break, that this country that we live in, United States, have been in existence as a formation maybe a little over 200, maybe 220 years. The community that we're talking about of our ancestors in South America has been in existence for over 400 years intact. Not through aggression, not through genocide, but through peace and harmony of Black families living together. If that's not a model for success, I don't know what is. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. 9832. Time for Awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kamban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard the special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
For 12 years, I and others like me have held out radiant promises of progress. I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. And so the collision course is set.
The desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self.
And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
I'm not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only one, you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you've called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP or the Urban League. So I said, I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I said that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first, because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the slave theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic Temple, it really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds. And wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we're black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House. You can even put him in his. He's going to still be a Tom. You can put him anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Encourage, let me just say this before our time winds up, and that is, I want the people in the audience to go back and look at the video clip from Roots. It's entitled something like Breaking Kunta Kinte. That scene opens with Lauren Green sitting in, who's the plantation master, sitting in his office, and then Fiddler comes in and says, we don't want to be too hard on the runaway. Kunta Kinte has just run away and been caught. And so the time comes for him to get his lashing. And if you look at this scene, it's about 9 minutes, and study the scene. Study the role of everybody or bodies that are in this particular clip. And you will find that there is an equivalent role in the political life of our country today, whether it's on the national level or on the local level. There's the black man who actually does the whipping of Kunta Kinte. There's the white man who does the whipping. There's the black man who intervenes with the boss man and tries to save the life of Kunta Kinte. There's Kunta himself, who eventually is forced to admit that his name is Toby. And there's dozens of bystanders, black, who are watching. This is a very powerful thing. And it's an analogy of exactly what is happening in our community today. Let's give those characters names in our community and call them what they are, and then take care of business about that.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're in conversation tonight with our guest, author, cultural historian, and associate professor of educational leadership and policy studies at Howard University, Dr. Kemet Shockley, an educator and activist, Kofi Lanials. The documentary, The Maroons of Palenque, South America. And we're in discussion about that interesting documentary that both of these men helped produce. And let me get everybody back in place here. Professor Shockley, Brother Kofi.
Yes.
We got some callers on hold. Before I go to them, let me let me go back to something that you talked about. You touched on the quadros in reference to the quarrels. I'm sorry. A reference to the groupings of people of the same age, young men and young women. They talked about the divorce rate there and among our people there and the town, the village, or the city was basically non-existent. There was no divorce rate. You stayed with your wife for your life. Plus they talked about how these things were put together, the unions of some of the young people. Explain that dynamic for our listening audience, because everything they do is culturally. It's culturally based. Everything they do, what I've derived from the documentary, as opposed to everything we do, the majority of it, put it that way, is not culturally based. Some of it is a mixture of what we've been exposed to through Europeans, and it's oil and water. That's why certain things don't seem to go well for us a lot of times. But talk about how that dynamic is done there. It seems foreign to me.
So with the quadros, of course, they're age grouping. So you're placed in your quadro when you're very young. They told us around 1 or 2 years old. Mm. Is when you are placed in your quadro and you're placed with people who were born around the same date.
Wow.
Then okay. You grow with those people. They obviously learn a lot about who you are in your personality. And in learning about who you are in your personality, they understand that it is their responsibility to help you find a good match. So when they're thinking about the person that they would like to pair you with, or the person that they think is best for you, they're considering things such as, can that person make you laugh? Does that person fit your temperament? What about that person's family and your family? Are those a match? And what we found interesting is when we were speaking to one of the members of a quadro, we said, well, Don't you guys think about how attractive the person is? Would you prioritize somebody who's very attractive over maybe someone who you get along with a little better? And he said, wait, why would you do that? Why would I care about how she looks if she's a really good person and she's from a great family? I'm going to love her because of who she is, not because of how she looks. I mean, just the fact that we asked that, he looked at us like we were crazy.
See, that's what I'm talking.
You know,
great. Okay.
In our culture, that happens sometimes.
Sometimes.
See, that's what I'm saying. When I was listening to that documentary, man, I advise the listening audience to get it because it's a blueprint there on how we can change our dynamic here in this country. Some of our people, we see stuff going on and we almost throw up our hands like it's nothing we can do. But when we see things like that happening right in this hemisphere from other brethren that have been displaced from the continent, and we see how the knowing of themselves and culture has established their community for over 400 years. I wouldn't say it's amazing, but it's a blueprint. I just can't put it into words.
You know, I have to interject it because the thought comes to me, in order for us to really see the value, and maybe, gentlemen, y'all can help me in confirming or not. A part of the cultural, African cultural value is the invisible informing the visible, where the Western cultural value is the visible is to inform you. And that, you know, because we, it'll be important, as you say, for us to get the lessons to recognize when we look at a community of people that we have to actually look at. That's that soft stuff. That's that invisible stuff that has allowed that glue to last 400 years, where the external, the visible stuff can't last that long. And that is a part of that African belief system, I believe, that the invisible informs the visible.
You know, the what you're talking about now is that a concept that people who speak Cree would call it the Nananome, the ancestral realm, looking at what we can learn from our ancestors and how important it is for us to be connected to, that which is there and easy to see, and then that which comes from the spirit world, because what we do in venerating our ancestors and remembering who they are in that concept of the Nananome, meaning that caring about those who came before us, is to acknowledge that there's nothing new under the sun, and that the people who came before us, just in the metaphysical, just looking at it metaphysically, we're talking about the way that we think about things and are informed by people who are whispering in our ear all day long the things we need to hear so that we can move ourselves along. The more attuned you are to the culture that you come from, the more African culture, the easier it is to hear that whisper. What they do is arrange everything around family. So will you have that connection to the ancestors, to the Nananome, through the fact that when you're born, the idea is to prepare you for two things. One, we want to prepare you to be a good wife and husband. So not prepare you to be a good wife and husband after you go out and do a bunch of stuff in your 20s and then get bored with it and then decide that now it's time to go get married in your 30s. But to prepare you from the time of your birth, how to have that second component, which is the subantrene, which is the righteous character. How can you develop a righteous character so that you can go out among your people and be a person of worth and value to the people that are in your community? Not how can I individually have everything I want and just do what it is that makes me happy? And so when you meet these people, and just like when I went to Senegal, I noticed the same thing, and that is that there is a certain, I sometimes don't know what to call it. It seems like a certain kind of innocence that's there. But I really think what it is this that invisible quality that you're talking about that has to do with the connection to the creator and the ancestors. Mm-hmm. So that connection, coupled with the fact that the people who are there are being taught from the time they're young to have righteous character, makes it so that you can have a functioning village. These are things that I think are at the root of why the village has been alive for 400 years.
It's okay.
It's really about whether or not it's really about the inner thing. It's not about the outer. So you're into something really important, I think, there, Richard, when you're talking about exactly what is it that the invisible informing the visible, and that is that spiritual peace that really makes them somebody different than who in this society people are spiritually. No effort toward righteous character here. In the United States and in European culture, it's an effort toward individual gratification. How can I make sure I am always happy and getting everything I want, even if it means I have to do something to you? And what that's doing is tearing this thing down, and it'll fall soon if it stays on this track, which it seems like it wants to.
Let's go to Newport News. Newport News.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm really enjoying this conversation. I don't want to do a lot of talking. I want to see if I can get you to delve into something that you hit on that I've been taught by older people, and I use it in my communications with everybody, especially Black people. The eyes are the windows to the soul. You talked about that elder saying that she couldn't see in that boy, she could see in that guy's eyes that she didn't know him. I traveled across country as a young man in the military, and I used to tell people this is the early 70s when I first went in the military. And even though I didn't know people, I could stand with them and talk for a few minutes. And if they refused to make eye contact and actually communicate with you, and you could tell the value to them, value you as a person, I knew to stay away from them. I think that has a lot to do with what we've lost as a culture, because we don't see value in other people. And you kind of hit on it when you said something about being able to use people for your own gratification with no respect whatsoever for how it impinges on their freedoms or their rights. And I'm really, really moved by this conversation, gentlemen.
I can offer some insight into one of the, you mentioned that the eyes informing the soul are informing you about the soul, and the interactions in Palenque, I've shared this before. Normally when I'm in the United States and I'm walking down the street and I'll interact with someone that I don't know, the first thing that they do is look down at my shoes to see what kind of shoes I have on. They're not interested in looking me in the eyes. They're interested in looking at my materials. After the shoes, they look at the rest of my clothing. They want to look at my cell phone. They want to see all the materials that I have, because that's supposed to give them a better sense of who I am than any conversation we could have, than looking me in the eyes. They want to know about the material. In Palenque, it's the exact opposite. They could care less about what you're wearing. They're concerned about what's in your eyes and what's in your soul and who you actually are. And when you interact with people like that, and that was my experience when I lived in Ghana, that people would stop you. They would want to talk to you. They would want to get a sense of who you are to figure out what is your connection. We're both connected to the same creator. So now let's figure out exactly how, through conversation, through that unseen connection that we have. And that was my experience in Palenque. They weren't interested in the materials. They were interested in the immaterial. And the ways that the elders interacted with both myself and Dr. Shockley, it was different. It was always about, I am your elder. How can I assist you? What can I offer you? How can I help you take something back to your culture so that as African people, we're all moving in the same direction? In the documentary, there's a part where an elder is speaking, and The Maroon Guard says that when they have a situation in Palenque, they always end with, and how can we help you? They want to know why you did what you did, but they also want to know how can they help you so that you're moving back towards your African core with anything that you do. So there's this sense of understanding who we are, searching for who the person who you're interacting with is, and then finding that commonality in that African identity.
Let's go to 609. 609?
Yeah, this is Brother Quadro from the BB Timmy.
How are you, sir?
How are you? Dr. Shafi and Brother Kofi, how are you?
Doing well. How are you doing, brother?
Yes, appreciate it, man. Listen to the conversation. And so I give one of the things when in watching the documentary that kind of struck me is how cognizant they were or they are in terms of having to defend their culture from outside influences in terms of the TV, the media, the music, and how, you know, some of the younger generation are still have that same awareness that's kind of passed down. But you see some of the younger ones now kind of infusing some of those external type things like the hip hop and all that kind of stuff, but making it their own in terms of passing their own message to next generations and, you know, showing that respect through the music. But at the same time, being aware that those things are external trappings that are that if they're allowed in, can infiltrate and kind of, you know, weaken that connection that they saw. That really struck me as something that's really, really powerful, you know, and in our communities, you know, in the Black communities in whatever city you're in, Philly, Chicago, Detroit, we have this sense of doing that. But I think that's one of the lessons we can do to understand that the things that we have, and they talked about, you know, the TVs and the cars and all that kind of stuff. If we focus on just, you know, just the things that we need to survive and protecting our culture from outside influences and passing that down, I think it's a valuable lesson that the documentary, at least for me, that's one of the major takeaways that I had. And like I said, I'm really, really, really thoroughly enjoying the conversation tonight. I have been on listening, and I appreciate what you brothers are doing.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your comment.
I think if I can just make a quick comment on what Brother Quadro just said, it's really important, I think, that we always remember that it's not guaranteed that we're going to be around. We do have to do things to make sure that we hold on to our culture and that we are around. I think sometimes because we were here first, somewhere embedded in our DNA, we get the idea that we're definitely going to be here. So we start thinking that we can play with things that shouldn't be played with. The idea that we can have an option. Sometimes I think we think we have the option of being African, of having African-centered education for our children, of following and having models that are really important, like what the Palin Carols are offering. This is not an option. This is about survival. And so when it comes to outside influences, like the brother was just talking about, you know, I think sometimes we think we can just simply adjust to these things. It'll be okay if I allow hip hop music, the destructive kind of hip hop music, if I listen to that, I'm grown, so I can kind of sift it out, and it won't impact me the way that maybe it would impact somebody who was quote weaker minded. But what we have to remember is that it might not impact you the same way it would another person, but don't forget about the fact that part of what we're trying to get to by adopting these African ideas and concepts is to having a little bit more of a righteous character in what it is that we do. So,
Excuse me, go ahead. I apologize.
No, go ahead. Yes.
No, Ellie, before you go to the next, because as you were saying that, I was wondering, you know, here in Philly, they're going to have a conference around African-centered education. And since your, you know, core study has been about African-centered education, how do you see, what are the lessons you see that come from Pele and Tara that could be infused when in whether it be independent African-centered education institutions or chartered institutions or public institutions? What lessons did that experience give you this possibly to incorporate in that that structural understanding of African center education to address those things?
Well, I think that we definitely need private, independent, African-centered institutions. Kofi and I did a study, and I've done a few studies of this nature, and that is looking at how African-centered education works in public institutions. These are studies that are actually currently published, looking at how African-centered institutions work when they're in the charter and in the public domain. We find lots and lots and lots of problems. Now, there's problems in the private domain as well, but in the private domain, usually the biggest problem is financial. But I was a board member on an African-centered charter. It was a school that was trying to be African-centered, and it was charter. So we've done studies and also have personal experience. And one of the things we find in those institutions is that it's hard when you have the public apparatus, the government and public apparatus having any say over what it is that you do. It simply is it creates a lot of chaos. You have to at least be able to determine who's going to work in the institution, and you have to determine who's going to lead the institution. And so you're not always able to do that when you're talking public and charter. So there are lots of problems with the public and charter models, but they are easier because the money is usually there easier than a private institution. So that those become some of the issues that we end up facing. But we've got to fight the menticide anyway. What Bobby Wright calls menticide, this notion of being miseducated in the public school system. So sometimes it can be helpful to have something, but what we have to fight is sometimes the notion is which is greater, zero or negative one. So is it better to have no institution or to have one that makes people, teaches people that they're getting an African-centered education, but they are actually being trained away from African-centered education because the system has put people in place who are taking them backwards. And what we had in Washington, D.C. Was a school that a charter school that was actually causing children to go backwards. And that school was trying to call itself African-centered, but it actually wasn't working. What we have among the Palin Carrolls, in their they have a school there where the idea there is connecting the school to the community. So there's no separation between school and community because the school is serving the purpose that the community says it has. So here we have community that wants one thing, harmony, a sense of justice, a sense of peace between the people in the community. Even though you might see other things, that's generally what people are wanting. But we have a school, we have schools that are designed to continue the menticide and to maintain the current order. And so to maintain that status quo, one of the things that they do in the schools is they consistently have a bunch of stuff swirling around talking about how much has changed, how we're changing this. They go from one test to another, from MISPAP to SOL test in Virginia to the Indiana ISTEP test. This state has a DC CAS test, et cetera. So you have all this stuff. It looks like it's changing, but it's actually a reiteration of the exact same stuff. And that's a trick to also make sure that the community can never really understand education. You can't understand it because it seems complex. There's so much. What does it take to get a kid in special ed, out of special ed? What kind of test is this? What's on the test? How does it work? And you would be surprised if you ask a lot of the teachers themselves who work in these systems what this stuff is, because they don't know either. And I know that because I teach those teachers.
We're in conversation tonight with author, cultural historian, associate professor of education, leadership, and policy studies at Howard University, Dr. Kemet Shockley, and his colleague, educator and activist Kofi Lanials. We're talking about the documentary about the Maroons of Palenque, Colombia, a Maroon community of free, sovereign Africans that has existed over 400 years. And keep in mind, we've been enslaved in this country, according to the calendar. The 400 years will be next year. This is a free sovereign community that was established down there by our ancestors that has existed over 400 years. And if you look at that dynamic, Richard, because it states in the documentary that our people from Palenque have matriculated to other cities, Cartagena and other ones. But it seems like Palenque is sort of like the capital of black life down there. Am I right, Professor Shockley and Brother Kofi?
Yeah, that is correct.
Okay.
That's kind of how the people think of it.
Yeah. Okay. And also we're talking about the dynamic of no crime existing in the town of over 400 years of existence. Three violent crimes in the history of the town. The Maroon Guards have been set up along with elders that are respected. They don't walk around with guns or anything like that. They handle these things with the respect of the community and conversation. Something I want to ask before I get to these calls that's kind of backed up. You mentioned that from 2 years old, a lot of the young men, the babies, female and male, are separated and observed. Is it the same dynamic when they're looking for lead? Because, you know, over the 400 years, it's obvious it's not the same leadership. It's always different elders. Are they observed the same way? Is that dynamic of observing the youth as they're growing up, whether they would make good leaders in the community? Is it the same type of a dynamic?
They have, in each cuadro, they're broken into cuadros based on gender, but there's a leader that for each cuadro. So as you get older, based on your leadership qualities, eventually the cuadro decides who their leader will be.
Mm, okay.
And that's one way that the community gets a sense of who their leaders are. But there's also a leadership dynamic where the elders and the teenagers have a council together where they talk about the issues in the community and how they're going to address them. And that allows for them to see who their leaders are, but also develop those young leaders to make sure that they're culturally grounded, that they have a vision for the future of the village. And they're almost going through their, in essence, a rites of passage, but focused on leadership and making sure that they're the next generation of leaders. One thing that is stated in Palenque by everyone is that they are luchadores. They say that we are fighters. All of us are warriors. There's not a single person here who is not a warrior. And with that identity comes this ability to lead. They believe that they are all leaders. So in essence, they're a community of leaders.
Okay.
They're a community that understands that they are responsible to one another and that their actions matter. And that at all times they have to be leading and showing their best self. So there's that sense in the community of who our leaders are based on our cuadro, but that we all have this leader warrior spirit inside of us.
Wow. Let's go to, let's try 518, 518, area code 518. 518, are you there? Let's put them, 518, let's put them back on hold. Let's go to 301, 301.
Hello, how are you guys doing?
How are you, sir?
Good. My name's Austin, supporter of Brother Kemet, also barber of Brother Kemet, and I wanted to thank everybody on the panel of what y'all are doing today. Y'all been making a lot of good points. I just wanted to add a few things. I think I haven't really seen the documentary, but I'm just listening to you guys and a few points that I feel like I could touch on.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like basically it's almost like a fraternity, how they look at it. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, you know, because I see a lot of brothers, it's almost like a brotherhood, you know what I mean? They got the military set up. They got goals, you know what I mean? I guess for where they want to see their people and how they're going to impact the society. And, you know, I see that that's kind of cool how they can, you know, how they can still maintain loving each other and being around each other, even in third world where there's poverty. Because a lot of times where there's poverty, there's always crime. So if you're able to maintain yourself, I feel like that's a good thing.
Great point.
I feel like the main thing that I really learned from everything that I'm listening to you guys is saying, that's confirming what I believe, and that's pretty much segregation. It seems like anytime you're segregated, that means you need each other, and in that way you depend on each other. And I feel like, you know, through that schooling and all different areas, you know, we could make an impact. But I also feel like we got to make, you know, loving Africa a cool thing. You know what I mean? It has to be something that where people can get incentives and want to join. Just like you said, those people was, you know, wherever they go, they seen it. You know what I mean? On their way to school. You know, it's no different from people seeing posters of they rap stars or whatever. You know what I mean? Or whatever you're promoting. So, and I feel like... I feel like we have to have people to invest in. I feel like there is a lot of people that we have with ideas, but we need, like I said, somebody to invest in us overseas and beyond. And I feel like what you said about counsel was good, too, because it's like, well, where do we go when we need counsel in our communities?
Yeah. Important points. Yeah.
Brother Austin, thanks for your contribution, man.
All right. No problem.
Peace.
One thing, you know, brothers, I wanted to, because this is a, you know, the origin of this, you know, comes out of the, you know, what the 15th, 16th century. And since that transfer is directly transferred to continent, even though if it's of different ethnic nations, that the community is a synthesis, not a, what is that, departmentalized different units. When I hear, you know, brother Elliot saying about, we talk about the education, we talk about the grade set, we talk about the council, those are all integrated units that makes up a social order compared to their separate, like you go to a school to learn one thing, or you go to a judicial system to do, you know, to deal with grievances. They are not directly interconnected. Is that fair to say about African social order, that it is an integrated social system?
I definitely think it's fair to say. I think
yes,
it's a cohesive, integrated social systems that come, like, have a center to them. And I think the center is the culture that mm-hmm. they have that really is centered around family. What we have in this kind of society is disintegrated units, because there really isn't a central feeling of European culture. Really is it's not a connected and coherent way of life for people. People, you're kind of on your own figuring it all out. There's not that central feeling of, we are here because we want to support each other as a community and family. So I definitely agree with that.
Let's try another call here. Let's go to 215. 215. Let's put that back on hold. Let's go to 267. 267.
Yes, Brother Elliot.
Yes, sir.
Brother Richard.
Yes, sir.
How are you? And your guest. I came on the call late. I'm learning a lot from listening. So I will yield the floor and continue listening. Take the next caller.
Okay. Thank you for your contribution, brother.
Yes, sir.
Let's go to 404. 404? 404? Are you there? Let's put them back on hold. You know what we'll do, Richard. How you situated? You all right?
Yeah.
Professor Shockley and Brother Kofi, can you stay over maybe about 15 minutes?
That's fine with me.
Yes, great. That's fine with me.
Great. We'll take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation, and you can be part of this conversation with author, cultural historian, associate professor of education, leadership, and Policy Studies at Howard University, Dr. Kemet Shockley, and his colleague, educator and activist Kofi Lyniles. Joining conversation in the time we have left by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072, spelled new as in numerous, on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your hosts, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
In 1492, you came up on these shores, 700 years educated by the Moors. 17th century, genocide and the gun. Middle Passage blessed to market the Africans in the so-called land of God. My kind words treated hard. From back then until now, I see and you agree. We have been a misrepresented people. From back then until now, just see my family tree. We have been a misrepresented people. We have been a misrepresented people.
Welcome back. Time for an awakening, and we're in conversation this evening with author, cultural historian, and associate professor of education, leadership, and policy studies at Howard University, Dr. Kemet Shockley, an educator activist, his colleague, Brother Kofi Lanials. The documentary is about the Maroon community. That is basically, for all intents and purposes, the capital of black life in Colombia, South America, called Palenque, a town that's been established for over 400 years by our ancestors, with no rate of divorce, with no homelessness, with three violent crimes in the past 400 years. The last one was in 1980, and the models that we can use to reestablish ourselves moving forward towards freedom and sovereignty. Let's get our guests back on and see if we can pick up another call here. Let's go to 215. Let's go to 646. 646.
Good evening to you, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard, and to your guests. Fascinating, conversation. It just seems to me that a lot of what the brother is saying is things that we in this country no longer participate in. And the main thing is the respecting of the elders. It seems like the elders are the ones who are making the proper decisions for the community. And that's something that here in America, we don't even deal with, address, focus, or even respect the elders anymore. I mean, the manner in which we treat the elders today, to be honest, which was disgraceful. And I guess that's why we are honestly in the condition that we are in today, because the lack of respect for the elders.
Yeah.
Professor Shockley, Brother Kofi?
Well, I don't have much to add to that other than we're operating against nature.
Yes.
And against the creator.
Yes.
With the society we live in is everybody wants to stay young and everybody wants to be young and act young, youth culture. But that goes against nature, and it goes against what's actually going to happen, which is that you're going to get older. And what we should be doing is celebrating our elders and celebrating the idea, the notion, and the reality of getting older and wanting to be wise and be a wise elder so that we can go on to become an ancestor. Because not everybody goes on to become an ancestor. Some people just die. So what we need to do is, yeah, go ahead, Russ.
And see, that's the issue that I think a lot of us don't understand, because we've never been taught about how to become an ancestor. It's like, I know you're in education right now, and you were earlier talking about the charter school situation. And I say that no African person should ever send their children to public school. You should homeschool your child and move forward your child in the direction and the vision that you see if you have an African value system. Now, if you're a Negro king, go ahead and send your kids to, you know, public school and all of that, because your actions and behavior is going to be that of a Negro king. But if you're trying to live an African value system, it's no way that you could send your kids to public school. It's just no way, because everything in public school is anti-African. They're just trying to identify those that they could grow to become Europeans, as far as I'm concerned. Or as one would even say better, good Europeans. Because if you look at it, and I mean, you can see it at Howard. The academics and the commitment to blackness was probably different at Howard than it is today. You know, and unfortunately, we haven't been able to gain control of these institutions to push forward an African value system. So until we figure that out, we're just going to be in this thing quandary of trying to, as one would say, be a better Negro. But my last question to you is this. How could one get a hold of this great documentary? Or is there a way that it may go on Netflix or something like that at some point in time? Because it needs to be seen, and it would shock a lot of our people if they saw how African people were acting and behaving in this documentary. Because, you know, most of our people don't believe that we could govern ourselves and do these type of things. And, you know, if it's something that's going on present day, we need to be able to witness this greatness.
Yes, and we definitely agree with you. We think that the film should be viewed by African people across the world, because it has great instructions and what we can do to get back to our sense of self. And the film is for sale. To find the film, there are two ways to find the film. One is to visit our Facebook page, and it's facebook.com, and then we are at Tip of Spear Docs. That's TIPOFDOCS. So if you're on Facebook and you type in Tip of Spirit Docs, it will take you to our Facebook page, and there's a link to purchase the film on our Facebook page. The second way to find the film is it's being hosted on Vimeo, which is Vimeo.com. And once you go to Vimeo.com, you type in the word Maroonage, which is for the Maroons, and that's spelled Maroonage. Again, that's Maroonage. And if you go to Vimeo and type in the word Maroonage, it will take you to a page where you can click on our film. We're the only full-length film under that word. So again, visit us at facebook.com, Tip of Spear Docs, and you'll be able to click on a link to buy the film from Facebook, or you can go directly to Vimeo to purchase the film.
Just to let everybody know, Tip of Spear is Tip of the Spear is our name of our production company.
Tip of the Spear, okay.
Yeah.
One last question, Jay.
You said Tip of Spear Doc D O Z S.
D O C as in cat.
D O C S.
Okay, D O C S. All right. Well, I'm going to try to get on Facebook right now to purchase this. But, you know, all I'm going to say in closing is, man, what you're doing with this documentary is absolutely amazing because, you know, this could maybe be the blueprint to get African people to see themselves in the manner in which we should be seen and not from the premise of the Yoruba.
Yes.
Thank you.
Oh, Jeff, I think that what the Pell and Carroll's offer can be a blueprint for us. We really need for more people to be talking about this film and what the Pell and Carroll's do and how that can work. We need people talking about it and trying to help us push this forward.
You know, it's not surprising that, you know, because I quote a Bible verse in the beginning of our program that says that our people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. It's not surprising that the overwhelming majority of our people here have no clue about the brothers and sisters down there, what they have established or anything else. They have no clue. No clue. And I'm glad that you men took the time out to discover these things, put them in a film form where people can see it and at least get a taste of what can be accomplished if we want to. It's not like we have to, it might take a little study to regain our cultural mind, so to speak, but it's not like that we have to do anything out of this world or impossible. We just have to change our behavior. The code of ethics, you can see that when the people are talking to you, both men, women, young and old, that they have a code of ethics in that community, which is needed here. We've adopted European values, which are making us act totally against nature, just like you said, Professor Shockley. And one question I want to ask both of you, because me and Richard was kicking it around, because when they stated message went across the documentary saying that they have on record, I think it's 3 violent crimes since the 400 years, over 400 years of existence. Do they have a written record of how they've been dealing, or do they have written laws established, or is everything verbal?
You know. A good question. I don't know that there's written record of it. We could find that out for you, brother. I'm not totally sure if they write down the rules and laws of their community in that particular sense. Most of it is verbal.
You know what? I'm glad you said that, because that's what Richard came to the conclusion about. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, that's it, that they use the African style. That's understanding, agreement, consensus, and conversation, and what we know from our verbal conversation, and that it's honored, though.
Okay.
Here, we need that written piece, because we don't have people who are going to honor anything.
Okay.
Then the thieves.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And I mean, and I want to go back and reiterate this point, you know, for the listening audience, as, you know, because what the point of this isn't just something that just happened, that you can maintain a cohesive society without having written rules and regulations that govern behavior. I mean, this is something, if you go around where African people, especially throughout the continent, you see societies that have been moving generation after generation after generation for long thousands of years that have no written record. Mm-hmm. And that's why memory becomes important, which is a part of the educational process, if I'm not mistaken. That's why the communication system becomes important, and even how to communicate to create that intergenerational relationship. And that's why I perceive them as technology. And one thing that I took away from your documentary is that understanding that even being displaced and being reassembled, that that's a deliberate process. It's a deliberate design. And that's why I'll continue to use the word, and I appreciate you saying that I'm this far off, of technology, because we think technology is something you build something material and make it work, compared to social systems or something invisible, say like even communication process of how to relate to each other. I think that that's important when we're talking about us probably redesigning ourselves to meet that kind of outcome that your film shows.
Yeah. And I think that the African way is a brilliant way, and I've worked for many years to try and understand it, and I'm still working to understand it, because when you think about the technology of trying to understand how to put human relationships together and how to keep people from destroying each other and how to have sort of a situation, what we have in this society is where the technology has outrun the sociology.
Right.
So they don't, because they think of technology as just stuff and, you know, phones and all this kind of stuff, they've allowed their technology to go so far beyond where they are in terms of sociology and the way that people think about in human interaction, that it's falling, the society is falling apart, but everything looks really pretty and you have nice screens that you can do stuff on, but yet people are falling apart. So our ancestors, I think, had a better plan in mind of what they were saying. They basically said, we want to have at the root of this good human connection and good human sociology. And we're going to put TVs and VCRs and whatever else they have today, all this stuff and social media. We're going to put that on a very far back burner and maybe come back to something like that after we have our people together where we want to be socially. But these Europeans are creating all this technology and social media and stuff, but people's human relationships are just really going to pot.
Matter of fact, I hear we had a psychologist, Dr. Fox's book, Addicted to White, and he's saying even the person that created Facebook, the reason why he created it, because he felt so alienated and isolated. So he created this platform to be able to communicate because he couldn't relate with other people.
Exactly. And we're following behind that person.
Yes.
That person's thinking, that person's need. We are following that person.
You know, another thing before we kind of wind things up, and I turn the floor over to you and Brother Kofi to kind of put things in a neat bow for us. One thing I picked up, a lot of things I picked up from the documentary, but one thing I seen clearly, that the strength of mind that has been passed down I'm not talking about to the next generation. I'm talking about over 400 years of families, the strength of mind that had to be passed down. Because it's not like the brothers and sisters there live in a bubble. They venture out. It mentioned in the documentary that some of them live in other cities. They do business in other cities. The one sister that you were talking to in the film is an entertainer, and she says she's traveled the world. But they always come back there. They know where their roots are. They don't come back with other stuff that they've been exposed to when they travel other places. They adhere to cultural values that have held that town together for over 400 years. I mean, that if we don't come away with any lessons, well, anybody that sees it is going to come away with a lot of lessons. But if we don't learn anything, we can learn something from that. That is going to take a mindset change. Our people here dealing with the, I mean, we've been poisoned by European values. It's clear. We might not see it. Some of us might not recognize it. But we've all been poisoned by the values of these Europeans.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And getting worse, too. Now
Brother Kofi, Dr. Shockley, I'm going to turn the floor over to both of you, and you can let us know, I mean, how we can reach you, both of you. I mean, I'm quite sure you got different ways to reach both of you. But, again, you can give out the links to the film. Anything you want to tell us, you know, in the final minutes, go, the floor is yours.
Sure. I'll go first, and then Brother Kofi, if you will probably give you all the link to the film again when he does his. But let me say, you can reach me at KMT. My name is spelled with no vowels, just K as in kite, M as in Mary, T as in Tom, .Shockley, S-H-O-C-K-L-E-Y, at howard.edu. KMT.Shockley at howard.edu. And let me say that the thing that I'd like to do actually is to ask the listening audience if they would help us out by spreading the word about the film. We've had the film in a couple of film festivals. The reactions have been very good in the film festivals that we've had the film in. We do need for people to do more talking about the film and maybe helping us to find people who can help us pay for the expenses that we incurred making the film. We had some assistance, but we incurred a lot of expense in making it. So we do need people to kind of help us with that kind of thing. I wish we didn't have to have such things, but that's just part of life, and it was an expensive endeavor, but it was well worth it. So if you can help by spreading the word, purchasing a copy of the film, helping us find people who are investors, that would be wonderful. That's all I'll say. Thank you so much.
This is Kofi Lee Niles. You can reach me at kofi.lenniles@gmail.com. That's kofi.lenniles@gmail.com. I do want to give the link to the film one more time. You can go to Facebook and visit our Facebook page, which is Tip of Spear Docs. That is TIPOFSPEARDOCS. Tip of Spear Docs, with the S at the end, or go to Vimeo.com, that is Vimeo.com, and type in the word Maroonage, that's Maroonage, and you'll find the video once you type in the word Maroonage and do a search. And I would just offer that we would like to continue to do films like this, and your support would definitely help us be able to work on future projects. And all of our work is focused on the African community and work related to African history and culture. So purchasing the film will lead to more films as well as other resources that we're looking to get into the hands of children in schools. So we do have other endeavors that we're looking to get into, but again, all related to making sure that there's accurate information about African history, culture, and of course its people. So we just thank you for your support, and hopefully everyone enjoys the film.
And the door is always open to both of you, man. If ever you want to come back and let us know about future projects or some things going on, or even things going on the Howard University front, Dr. Shockley, the door is open to you. Just contact me, reach out. You got my email. It's no problem.
Thank you so much, brother. We really appreciate this.
You know what? One other thing. The your book, The Miseducation of Black Children, do you have other titles? Yeah. Or how can people get your book if they want it?
That book you can purchase on Amazon. It is available on Amazon.com. I have two other titles that are coming out this year, actually. Well, this year and then one next year. I'm sorry. Next year and the year after. I forgot. We're almost out of this year. I have one coming out that's called Sooner, probably in the spring. It's called Campus Uprisings. It's about the uprisings that have been happening on campuses as a result of dealing with white supremacy.
Okay.
And then I'll have a book on African-centered education that probably will be out. It could be 2019, but it might be the year after that. The other book that's already out is The Miseducation of Black Children, again, available on Amazon. And then there are, if you're interested in African-centered education in general, I have written 30 or 40 articles that you can easily find by going to Google Scholar. And all of the stuff I've written, most of it will pop up right there on Google Scholar.
Great.
Good. Okay, man, I want to thank you for being with us, and I'll talk to you soon.
I really enjoyed the documentary and this discussion we had, and it really invigorates the that spirit, just you gentlemen doing the work and putting forward shows that the African spirit, the ancestors continue to work through people like yourselves to show what has been created and what has to be recreated. And I respect that.
Sure.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Peace. All right. Richard, yes. Interesting discussion. And, you know, I'm glad that Mike could come on and talk about a piece of our history that, you know, I dare to say that most of us know nothing of. And it was really refreshing to see a model that can be duplicated. We can do these things neighborhood by neighborhood in this country, right here. These are things that we can start implementing and start developing young minds to do this. We don't have to operate within the constraints. You know what I'm saying? These things can be done, and it's not in violation of anything that is against, quote unquote, the laws of this country. We can start governing and setting up mechanisms to police and govern our communities and our spaces where we dwell.
I mean, one thing that they reemphasized, and it's in the documentary, reemphasized in our discussion was, just imagine that we're, as you say, and you talk about this all the time, we were talking about this earlier, in a block of 60 homes that they say the children who are born that at 2 years old, we're going to be directing them in every area of their development and watching to see what kind of qualities. I mean, 60 families, you know, starting off, and that's no time. I mean, 10 years, they're 2 years old. They're 12 years old.
I know it. That's what I'm saying. These things can be turned around almost overnight in our communities if we implement some of these things that are out here for us to do. We don't have to reinvent the wheel.
And create that bubble without being seen as a bubble. I mean, just the idea that they're saying that these men and women, they have a network that no matter where they go, that network, it knows
and they know that they're interconnected and responsible for each other. And we, no matter where they go, that they know they have to come back. And that's why I take it that you say capital. Because no matter where in the world, they know they have a place to come back to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a part of making them who they are. And they have a language that reinforces that. They have a social relationship that reinforces these invisible things. In the military, under military science, they call it soft power. You know, you can have guns and bullets, but if you don't have strategy, if you don't have strategic intent that deals with soft power, how you control, then you really don't know how to control. And we live in a society that is using a lot of soft power called entertainment. Propaganda.
Yep.
Right? Those are military instruments to maintain control and dominance without it being seen.
You know, before we wind things down this evening, I just want to go over that lineup this week, African Perspectives with Brother Oshi, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Time for an Awakening. Always interesting discussion on African Perspectives with Brother Oshi. From 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed on Time for an Awakening. And 8 to 9, Let's Buy Black365.com with Sister Nataki and Brother Talib. They'll be entering into their second season. It ought to be any day now. I got to get in contact with Sister Nataki and get ready to start loading that second season on Time for Awakening website. On Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. On Wednesday, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. On Thursday, a new show on Black relationships, a married couple, Joy and Troy. The Joy and Troy Hour comes on from 7 to 8 on Time for an Awakening. And on Friday, Time for Awakening is back from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always. We'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the thing that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of. Fireman. got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. To save the children. Children.